Many of you may have heard of the new memorial in Monroe County that was just put up in Mount Hope Cemetery. It's dedicated to all of those who died in three institutions here. They were social welfare institutions, and the folks who died were subsequently buried in Mount Hope Cemetery with no markers. And so the title of the memorial is Invisible in Life, Invisible in Death. And this title got me thinking a little bit about what I'd like to reflect with you on this weekend. So this week, all across the country, last weekend and this weekend, many churches, synagogues, and mosques are celebrating what they call Children's Sabbath. And the Children's Sabbath is an initiative of the Children's Defense Fund, whose mission is to champion policies and programs that lift children out of poverty, protect them from abuse and neglect, and ensure access to health care and quality education. And as you may know, Spiritus Christi is in the midst of a three-year cooperation and partnership with the CDF to try to do that here in Rochester. Now, in the biblical tradition, the Sabbath was a time for the three R's. And that's not reading, writing, and arithmetic. The three R's are rest, reflect, reprioritize. So the Sabbath was meant for rest, reflection, and reprioritization. And so that's what we're gonna do a little bit of today. So I'd encourage you to just sit back. It's gonna be about 15 minutes, okay? We're gonna do a little reflection, and then hopefully by the end of today, we're gonna do some reprioritization. In Africa, you may have heard of the Maasai tribe, very famous tribe of warriors, and they have a traditional greeting that they would say to each other, and when it's translated, it means, "And how are the children?" And the hoped-for response is, "All the children are well," meaning that the priorities of protecting the young and the powerless are in place. And we hear some echoes of this in our first reading today. Anytime we hear the words widows and orphans in the biblical tradition, they're talking about vulnerable people in society. People who might be invisible, people who might be overlooked. And they believe that if these groups are being cared for, everyone will be well. And so, how are our children? Children remain the poorest age group in the United States, which we know leaves them very vulnerable for health and behavioral health issues later in life. Compared with cities its size, Rochester ranks in the top five for child poverty, some years coming out as number one, with almost 50% of our city's children in poverty, and we are the first in the nation for the rate of extreme poverty. Rochester has the second highest food insecurity rate in New York, with 70% of our city children at risk for hunger. And whether you live in the city or the suburbs, you know that young people are in what many call a mental health crisis, with record levels of depression, suicidal thoughts, and anxiety. And these are just a few of the statistics we could cite. So how would you say the children are doing? The great civil rights advocate and public intellectual James Baldwin remarked back in 1963, "As long as my children face the future they face, and as they come to the ruin they come to, your children are very greatly in danger too." And so today is a time to set aside a moment and reflect on the state, not just of the young people we care for or know, but young people all around us. My friend Charlie King is a great folk singer and activist, and he has a very poignant song called "I Cannot Sleep." And in the song, he sings of not being able to sleep because he's thinking about the suffering of children all around him. And he says, "If there were one, there would be cause to wonder. If there were one, there would be cause to weep. But they number so many in the thousands, and for each one, I cannot sleep." Now, there's a lot of reasons why we are in the situation we are in today, and why so many of our young people are very greatly in danger. And it would require more time than we have today. So I want to focus on one that I don't know or think gets mentioned often enough, and it's adultism. And so like any ism, Adultism is the routine dismissal of or devaluing of the ideas, feelings, experiences, and needs of our young people. It's what we likely experienced when we were young, and the adults in our lives dismissed our experiences and may have said things like, "Oh, grow up. What do you know? You're only a kid." Children should be seen and not heard. You think life is hard now? Wait till you get older. As long as you live under my roof. And we could probably go on and add many to this list. And if we were doing a workshop on adultism, I would ask each of you after, and what did it feel like to hear those statements? What did it get you thinking about your life and the world? And in so many ways, intentionally or unintentionally, we dismiss or disregard the perspective, voice, and experiences of our young people. They don't sit at our decision-making tables. We often don't take their experiences as a group seriously or trust their perspective. And we generally do not create processes that include them or make it easy for them to participate. Now, my brother-in-law Chuck is a teacher in Atlanta, and he teaches third to fifth grade kids with intellectual disabilities like Down syndrome and autism. And Chuck had a student named Matthew. And whenever Matthew was being told what to do or being subjected to a process that didn't make much sense to him, he would roll his eyes and say, "Boring." And I thought, what if our young people started to do this every time they encountered a process that didn't include them or wasn't structured for them? Maybe not unlike church or this homily. Boring. We'd probably hear that over and over and over. Now, I'm not saying that we need to do everything that our young people tell us that they want. Like if they say, "I really want to live in Disney World," we're like, "I've been waiting to move to Orlando. Thank you." Or if they said, "We should only play Taylor Swift songs at church," we'd say, "That's a fantastic idea." Or banish broccoli forever. And we say, "Absolutely, I'm with you." Young people need structure. They need guidance. They need caring adults in their lives. But I am also saying that adults need to more vigorously see them as partners in creating this world and taking seriously their experience of living in it. Now, it's actually quite amazing what can happen when we partner with young people. And I read about this city design process in Melbourne, Australia, where they were moving ahead with plans to redesign the center city. And they, at one point, somebody said, "We haven't asked any children what they'd want." And so they had this special session for 400 kids. And they said to them, "Our cities should be places of happiness for everyone, including children. Sometimes adults make decisions about the future without consulting children. And so we want to know how you would use this space. What does a happy city look and feel like?" But they didn't just give them a piece of paper and say, "Write this out." They gave them thousands and thousands of Lego pieces and said, "Build what it looks like and tell us a story about it." And so these young people, using Lego bricks and then telling stories, described a city with big open spaces that were family and pet friendly. There were spaces to connect with friends, listen to music, eat. They even designed a special area downtown where kids could make secret potions. And they enabled kids to be able to swing from tree vines. The young people envisioned rooftop gardens, edible gardens, and spaces with wild animals from ducks to tigers. In fact, they thought of quite a few things the designers would never have considered. It is amazing what happens when we partner with our young people. Now, in prep for today, I wanted to include the voices of young people in my reflections. So I reached out to some teacher friends and others online who gave back responses. And I want to thank Spiro, Robin, Eileen, Emily, Taylor, and maybe there were others who responded to me that I've forgotten. And so some of these responses also came from our Vacation Bible School young people this summer. So one of the questions we asked was, if you were in charge of the world, what would you do to keep kids safe? Here's what they said. "I would make sure everyone had a friend. No one yells or gets mad. Stay away from wildfires. Give kids a chance to say what will keep us safe. Make sure kids go outside and keep an eye on them. Make sure everyone has a home and enough stuff to live a good life. Never get between a baby animal and its mother. Make sure LGBTQ plus kids were supported and wear a seatbelt. Not bad advice for living right there, I think. Then we asked, what's important to you? They said, when a friend is sad, help them. Take care of your family and friends. Help everyone in this world feel important. Respect everyone and stop being mean. I want everybody to have money, but not me, because I already have everything I need. I want to build a big place for homeless people to stay and live. This was one of my favorites. I want all the mosquitoes to go to a different country to live. I wish the violence would stop. And then we asked the young people, what do you worry about? What are your concerns these days? One of them said, I am worried because I am invited to two birthday parties on Saturday and they start at the same time. I don't know how we can go to both. I worry about my cat. I worry about riding the bus with a girl that is mean to me. I worry about falling down in school. I worry about doing division because I think it's going to be confusing. And I worry about my family. You know, when I first set out to do this, I admit that I was hoping for some responses that would melt your hearts and make you think, there is no way we can't support kids. And then when I saw the responses myself, my heart melted because they're just so ordinary. Kids want to play with their friends. They want to love their families and be with their pets. They want to learn, explore, and play. They want to feel safe, be healthy, and have the basics. And at this time in history, they desperately need adults to show up for them so that they can. They need our help in creating a world where they can experience safety and be provided with what they need. They need more from their adult allies. Now, it's also important to remember that even while so many people, young people, lack the power to change their conditions directly, they are always trying to make life better. I melt, and maybe you do, when I see those Facebook or Instagram videos of, like, there's two little kids and one's in distress and the other one just sort of goes up to them and puts their arm around them. Or the kid just takes out their lunch and is feeding a pigeon. These young people show us all the time what we as humans are hardwired for, compassion and caring. But our young people also know how to rise up and work to change the world. And there are a lot of stories we need to remember and keep telling, especially so our young people hear them. You know, in 1963 in Birmingham, Alabama, 1,000 children were jailed for marching in groups of 50 through the streets, singing freedom songs as they fought for civil rights. And there were so many young people, as young as age 7, that were put in jail that they actually had to close the jails down. You might remember back in 2018, 18-year-old Emma Gonzalez and her classmates in Parkland, Florida, sparked a movement of more than 750 rallies in every state protesting gun violence, saying, enough is enough. And in 2019, the now famous Greta Thunberg helped us start school walkouts, which led to the Fridays for the Future campaign, in which millions and millions of young people around the globe in 150 countries walked out of schools to demand action on climate change. So the question for me is not, are our young people rising up in this world and are they telling us what they need? But when they do, are we listening and supporting them? Are we creating places and spaces for them to help shape our actions, our priorities, and how we spend our dollars in ways that address their concerns? Are we putting them at the center of our conversations? You know, in church, before we hear the gospel, we do a little ritual. We make a cross on our forehead, on our lips, and over our hearts. And I was taught that when we do this, we say, God be on my mind, on my lips, and in my heart. And I thought that in addition, maybe we can continue to pray that children be on our minds, on our lips, and in our hearts as we move through the weeks ahead, as we sit in meetings, as we make decisions, as we spend our money, and as we plan activities. You may have seen another one of James Baldwin's quotes that's been going around the internet lately, especially as we witness the deaths of so many children in Israel and Gaza. He said, "The children are always ours, every single one of them, all over the globe. And I am beginning to suspect that whoever is incapable of recognizing this may be incapable of morality." There is a lot at stake, and children here and around the world need us more than ever. Now, after church today, you will have an opportunity to make an impact. We have folks from the Spiritus team and I think from Children's Agenda who are going to be at the coffee hour. And there's numerous state and local initiatives that we're asking you to get behind to help our kids. And I really hope that you will spend some time learning about and supporting these initiatives and letting our children stay on your minds, on your lips, and in your heart. And won't it be an amazing day when we greet each other and ask, "And how are the children?" And we will all enthusiastically respond, "They are well."